If you're the nice young men and women who are promoting Aurora Organic Dairy, you say that's the best we can do in a high desert environment is gives them the dirt, give them some dirt to walk on and some baled hay for dry matter, along with as much grain as the organic folks will let us. But ultimately, that doesn't achieve the organic standard. But you can see the dynamic here that they're playing against. Oh, we can't meet the organic standard in this environment, so we are going to water it down so we can claim the seal anyway. That's the nicest way that I can put it.
Welcome to the Real Organic Podcast. I'm Lindley Dixon, co-director of the Real Organic Project. We are a grassroots, farmer-led movement with an add-on organic food label to distinguish organic crops grown in healthy soils and organic livestock raised on pasture. Today, we're celebrating our one-year anniversary of the Real Organic Podcast, interviews with farmers, scientists, authors, and organic movement leaders. And I want to thank you for listening. And if you've just found us, please be sure to subscribe and tell your friends. We have a lot to learn together in the coming interviews. You just heard from Alan Lewis, Vice President of Government Affairs, Stakeholder Relations, and Organic Compliance at Natural Grocers. I make fun of him for that long title. But they are a chain of grocery stores that only sources organic produce, and they won't source from any confinement livestock operations either. Alan always blows us away with his insider knowledge of how getting food from farm to shelf really works, and he doesn't hold back in this episode, so please enjoy.
We are talking today with my old friend, Alan Lewis. Welcome, Alan.
Hey, it's great to be here, Dave. Good to see you.
Yeah, so Alan, geez, he works hard all the time. He's always out really trying to protect organics. So much work you do. And, you know, you're one of the more informed advocates in America, really. You really know a lot about it. You're a vice president of Natural Grocers. Do I get that right?
Yeah, one of many.
One of many.
One of
many.
Yeah,
that's right.
Government affairs and advocacy. Yeah.
And Natural Grocers is...
Well, you know, we're one of those old school health food stores, started in 1955, still run by the family, and we've slowly grown to 166 stores in 20 states, west of the Mississippi. And when you hear about all of these banned ingredient lists from all of these other retailers, well, that's our list. That's something we started a long time ago.
Okay, so you're a different chain of stores in that do I have it right that you do not carry CAFO milk?
Oh, absolutely not. But it's actually different than that. The only milk we sell comes from pastured cows, primarily grass-fed, but as you know, some of them are supplemented with 5 or 6% grain, but they're pastured. And that includes dairy ingredients in the products that we sell. So we don't do this weird step standard where, yeah, we sell a little bit of grass-fed milk here and there, and then everything else is conventional. We're very serious about raising the standards for everybody. And we have a very loyal and trusting group of customers that we've built up over 66 years now. Because we are so careful and transparent about the products we sell and what's in them.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to talk to you today about organic dairy. It's having a rough time. Could you talk about that? Talk about what that rough time is and why it's happening?
I've gotten deep into dairy in the last 4 months. And I'll tell you that as I talk to the old men and women who have been around in dairy since the 70s, two things come to mind. They have been absolutely overwhelmed by anti-competitive behavior. And I'm going to tell you, they are afraid of the dairy industry as it is today. And they've warned me not to kick that hornet's nest because it'll come around and bite me. That's how deep, I'm going to use the word corruption. That's how deep the corruption is in the dairy industry in general. And I'm seeing this thread clearly where conventional dairy wants to eliminate organic and grass-fed dairy from stores, or make it so unaffordable that consumers won't buy it and those operations will dwindle to just small local and regional sellers. Is that alarming enough?
That's alarming. It seems to me that that's not working so far, in the sense that I think there are a lot of things that aren't working, but organic milk actually is getting less expensive. Is that true?
Yes and no.
Okay.
If you're buying organic milk at Target and Walmart and Costco and Safeway and Kroger on their private labels, then sure, it's cheaper because those are CAFO dairies that shouldn't be certified organic. And that creates a huge problem for the real organic grass-fed dairies because they can't compete on price when the consumer sees the USDA seal and assumes that organic milk is organic milk. So we're growing that market and lowering the price, but we have to define our terms carefully because in the long term, it'll make or break the industry.
Yeah, yeah. The price for the consumers, some of it is going down. Certainly for the Walmart brand milk, it's going down. What about for the private labels like Organic Valley and Horizon?
Well, I've done a nice price survey for the Colorado market for all of the retailers on like products. I'll send that to you in case you want to put the slide in here. But there is a broad swath of competitive, reasonable prices for a half gallon of organic milk, whether that's whole, 2% or skim. And it runs in that high threes to low fives for a half gallon of milk. That seems to be the sweet spot where consumers are willing to pay the premium for a better product that has an environmentally responsible footprint.
And are they getting that product when they pay the price?
Yeah. You know, I have my favorite brands, and my favorite brands are not the Simple Truth from Kroger and not the Costco, Kirkland, and, you know, all that stuff that's coming off of Aurora. And by the way, Natural Grocers has never sold Aurora organic milk, which drives them to distraction. There are extremely high quality organic grass-fed milks in our stores and in a lot of stores. But it certainly is not what the average consumer goes in to buy. When you can get a half gallon of milk at Walmart for $2.65 all day long, I think, well, I'll double check, but a gallon of milk at Walmart or Target is so inexpensive as to be inconceivable. You know, and that goes back to the federal price supports. That goes back to externalizing all sorts of costs. And it also goes back to forcing the dairy industry to scale up and externalize their costs to deliver wildly inexpensive milk with wildly inappropriate environmental concerns associated with it.
So one of the things that we hear is from some people is that organic needs to have a bigger tent. And meaning, well, let's welcome in Aurora because that will offer a low-cost product to people who have less money. And one of the things that I see is that it's not like that's an isolated event. If you allow Aurora in under the organic label, now all organic milk becomes less expensive pay price to the farmer. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct. And why would you pay $2 more for a half gallon of organic milk when Simple Truth or the Great Value brand at Walmart or Target, I get them all mixed up. If those are $2 less and they're side by side with, Alexander or Organic Valley or a local organic brand, it's really hard for the average shopper with any price sensitivity to say, I'm going to pay more to support this farm over this less expensive milk. That big tent is a terrible, terrible metaphor and a terrible way to approach expanding the brand. What we have to do instead is marginalize those CAFO organic dairies and really call them out as nothing but conventional dairies with an organic certification. Otherwise, in the long run, we won't have organic dairy available. The price spread is so severe, and the pressure from retailers and the pooling conventional co-ops is so so intense that any small dairy will just be selling out the back of their pickup with a herd share. They won't have access to retail.
Yeah. Okay. There's so much in there, Alan, right? Access to retail. Yes. You know, that's really important. You know, first, just for people, because some people won't know listening to this, what's a CAFO?
Oh, concentrated animal feeding operation. It's a term defined by the EPA, actually, because they create so much intense pollution, whether it's dust, particulate matter, liquid manure, urine, and pest infestations, that they are regulated as an environmental hazard. I think that's a really good shorthand. Raising animals in an environmental hazard situation, that's what a CAFO is.
And what percent?
And that can range from, I think, 1,000 animals to an unlimited number of tens of thousands of animals in a very small kind of shoulder-to-shoulder concentration.
Right. So the animals are packed together, and they're very easy to feed there, and they're very easy to remove the manure. It doesn't work very well. The animals are not healthy in that situation.
Imagine, to be gross, that you're standing in 6 inches of your own poop for 8 months, and your feet are rotting off, and the animal next to you is so aggravated, he's biting at your skin, and you are being given growth promoters if you're beef cattle, in order that you grow faster. You're being given antibiotics because the pathogen load in that environment is so intense, and you're constantly inflamed. A lot of what we think of as animal weight is inflammation. And downstream is really important because those pharmaceuticals, the antibiotics, the hormones, those all end up in the urine and the manure, and those are collected in lagoons. They tend to concentrate heavy metals and pathogens and viruses and antibiotic-resistant genetic material. And ask me, Dave, what do we do with that liquid manure?
Alan, what do we do with that liquid manure? It sounds like there's a lot of it.
We do two things with it. We suck it out into massive tanker trucks, and we spray it back onto cropland. And it accumulates on the cropland so quickly that the EPA has a whole set of regulations for how much heavy metal and pathogen contamination a cropland can bear over X number of years and X number of applications of this fetid liquid manure. This is conventional agricultural system, and that's why I refer to CAFOs as an environmental hazard, because that's exactly how they're regulated. The second thing we do with liquid manure is wait for the rainy season, and it's perfectly legal to let water and diverted water enter a liquid manure lagoon and overflow into nearby waterways. and contaminate groundwater, recharge pools, streams, and rivers downstream. That's the, you know, when you see the North Carolina floods and all of that water going in and out of the CAFOs, the operators are happy. They got insurance on the animals, and they've got a clean lagoon after that flood event. Not really a well-thought-out system when you're talking about public and environmental health, let alone animal welfare.
Okay, so this sounds terrible. And what percentage of American meat, milk, and eggs, just conventional, is currently coming from CAFOs?
Well, it's interesting because from my little, in my little world where I know Will Harris and Matt Mayer and Kerry Balcom and Don Davis and all of these people that are doing grass-fed regenerative grazing, either for livestock and or for dairy production, to me, it's this great uplifting movement and a story where everything is happening and everyone's talking and everyone's nudging, saying, it was me, it was me, it was me. I'm the guy that's making this happen. I'm the woman who was talking about this 30 years. But to answer your question, it's almost all of meat in a retail store is CAFO production, whether that's poultry, pork, cattle, or dairy. It's almost all CAFO production. And if you're not looking for specific brands and specific seals, you're just getting bamboozled, because you can put almost anything on those labels and make it look better than it is.
So CAFO production, this horrible thing that is essentially unregulated, the EPA has labeled it, but they're not really regulating it. It's polluting.
No.
It produces a very inferior product from terms of nutrition and health. I mean, I've talked to dairy farmers who used to be conventional. I said, yeah, the vet would come all the time. And as I became organic, I stopped needing a vet to come at all. The animals were just healthy.
Right.
As it turns out, their natural state is one of health. I can imagine that,
you know, American grass-fed.
Yeah.
The American grass-fed standard bans all use of antibiotics, because when an animal is on pasture in its natural environment, they don't get sick. And so all of those 2,000 people that are operating under that seal have agreed that they don't need antibiotics. But on the occasion where some animal is particularly sick for some reason or injured, yeah, they will administer antibiotics to keep it safe and alive. But then it's removed from the herd. But economically, it's irrelevant. It's an immaterial cost. They can still sell it, by the way. But they are happy not to need antibiotics, because guess what? They wouldn't use them anyway. You're exactly right.
Okay. So the American diet of meat, milk, and eggs, conventional, is essentially all coming from these animal factories. Not all, but essentially all. It is the norm. It is the convention now.
It is the convention. And the trick is that all of those are industries self-regulated and promoted. So the dairy industry has something called the Farm Standard, FARM. All that does is put in writing all of the conventional dairy practices, so that all of the conventional dairy practices that we've been talking about are met, and then you can use the farm seal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's this preposterous position that they put consumers in. I also don't want to forget, Dave, that it's not just when the animals hit the feedlot that we have a problem. Almost all GMO agriculture and monoculture and destruction of biodiversity and woodlands, that's all to grow grain for either ethanol or feeding these livestock. And especially on cattle, those livestock are not meant to eat that food, which is what's causing the inflammation, digestion, and infection problems. So, it's a 360 degrees problem. But when you look at the beautiful marketing that, say, Chobani does, right? God, everybody loves Chobani. When you look at their practices, side by side with their marketing, the beautiful grasslands with, you know, one cow per acre. This is why consumers like almost don't have a chance unless they do a deep dive and really decide which brands they want to support.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank God we have organic as an alternative to conventional system, don't we?
We could. Yeah, we could.
We could.
The people at Costco and Aurora who show up at the Organic Trade Association meetings, I think some of them have been on the board. These are really nice people who, I wouldn't say drink the Kool-Aid, but are proud of their operations. Now, they won't let me visit. They won't give me an invite. All I can do is fly over in a Piper and look down at where the cows are. But they believe that what they're doing is somehow okay because they're able to lower prices. And when you ask them about externalizing costs to the land and the grain feeding that they're using and the health of the animals, they get very, very uncomfortable. So there's a certain amount of willful ignorance. You know, were I the leader of the OTA, I would just put them on notice that you're going to be weaned out of here, choosing my terms appropriately. You're going to be weaned out of here. So build brands that reflect in the standards, organic standards that have integrity. Otherwise, you're going to end up as being a premium conventional brand, not a true organic brand with favored status in a proper premium.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, that's what we're all trying to do is to, you know, reclaim the meaning of organic, which is certainly for a cow, it means that she is out on pasture and she is getting her nutrition and she is getting, there's cycling going on. Her manure becomes part of the fertility of the land instead of this toxic waste that it's impossible to deal with responsibly. Do you think that, so you live in an economic world, you get to see behind the curtain more than most of us, and you know how hard it is going to be to change this. Could we talk a little bit about that? Why is it so hard to change? I think that almost any consumer, even a consumer, you know, who's going to get the good deal at Walmart, and the good deal at Walmart makes it look like a store that's charging more is just ripping you off. It's like, God, it costs half as much here. This other store is ripping me off. I don't think so. I don't think it's the same product a lot of the time. So the question is, how do we change the system so that the 89 farms in New England who are being dropped by Horizon aren't going to get put out of business, but there'll be other labels that will gladly purchase milk from them because they know it is the milk they're looking for. It's actually the cow in the pasture on the carton of milk.
Dave, there's two ways to answer that. Do you want a primer on the deep corruption of conventional dairy, or do you want a inspirational ideal of regional community-supported dairy markets?
I think we need both of those. Because I don't think we get the second until people understand the first. If people think they're already getting that, then no, they're not going to go through the work of learning what these labels mean. But they have to understand the ways in which they're being misled.
So I'll try to keep this short, and if I go on a little bit too long, feel free to rein me in. But I've been doing this deep dive on the conventional dairy co-ops. And I want to really be clear, because a lot of people listening will think the Crop Co-op, Organic Valley, and some other co-ops in the organic industry that are tried and true and foundational to the organic seal. I'm not talking about those co-ops. I'm talking about the big conventional co-ops, and the biggest one that's really left and controlling the show is DFA, Dairy Farmers Association. So I started by telling you that 85% of retail in Colorado, and I want to say that's pretty common across the country, is controlled by five stores. Controlled means those are the only physical stores left, and that's how many dollars they're actually selling of groceries, 85%. That's Walmart, Target, Costco, Safeway, Kroger, just five. Whole Foods is a distant also-ran in terms of retail grocery in Colorado, and then they have something like 30 stores here. So they are what they are. So the retailers have allied with the co-op, and the retailers have become vertically integrated dairy producers. So it gets complicated because Safeway and Kroger have dairy plants in Denver, and they are having milk hauled. Now, all of Colorado has 87 dairies with greater than 100 cows, Dave. So you go Vermont, and all of those dairies are in three northeastern counties. So it's not only economically concentrated, it's geographically concentrated. And then the production, there's five pooling dairies that receive the hauled raw milk off of these big industrial dairies. That goes to Safeway, it goes to Kroger, and it goes to the DFA co-op. One is Meadow Gold, and one is called Fort Morgan. Fort Morgan makes powdered and concentrated milk, and Meadow Gold is a big brand here that's home delivered, and they make a whole lot of other dairy milk and milk products at the same time. But let's just look at Kroger, that can pay whatever it wants to its producing dairies. No controls there, and they can lower the price as much as they want, and then the federal subsidies will kick in to make up the difference. And then they're going to package their milk, they're going to make ice creams and novelties and cream or whatever in their plant, package them under their private labels, and then their secret labels that they own, but people don't know they own them. And then they self-distribute those on their own trucks to their own stores across the region. And Safeway does the same thing. Now, it all's kind of, okay, great. We know about vertical integration. But the problem is that they have also allied with the Colorado Milk Marketing Board, which is essentially established to help the dairy co-op, and they are telling UNFI, which is a big natural products distributor, to raise their prices on organic milk by 20% at wholesale, which means all the little grocery stores, including the one I work for, has to raise its retail prices by 20%. So suddenly, that natural channel becomes 20% more expensive for the same milk, in the same packaging, made in the same plants out of state from the same cows. So how could it be that a vertically integrated retailer can ally with a co-op to force the dairy industry to consolidate the only large dairies and then determine that natural and organic dairy products have to be significantly more expensive than they've ever been across the state? I mean, the depths of the, I'm going to use the word corruption, but the depths of the corruption, double dealing, and interlocking directorates are astounding.
Alan, let me jump in for a second because I want to understand. Yeah. Is this true of milk produced in Colorado or milk sold in Colorado?
Yes. So it doesn't matter because all of these natural and organic brands that Natural Grocers sells come from out of state. It's Organic Valley. It's a lot of the Horizon from Texas. It's Alexander Farms. I'm not remembering all of the others, but no, it's not Colorado milk.
So they're produced.
There is so little Colorado. There's no Colorado milk except micro dairies and organic Aurora.
Aurora. We'll talk about Aurora. So this milk that's produced elsewhere, much of it being real organic, you know, I don't mean labeled, but it is real organic, is coming into Colorado, and this board is saying you need to charge a 25% premium on this milk? Are they only saying that?
20% premium.
20% premium. Yeah. Are they only saying that to small retail outlets, or are they saying that to Walmart?
Well, this is the collusion, because Kroger and Safeway and Walmart and Target and Costco self-distribute. So they get these big deliveries at their distribution centers that then go out to their stores. Our distributor is a third-party, full-line grocery distributor, and we do hundreds of millions of dollars of business with them. But because we're being delivered to at individual, smaller health food stores, we don't qualify for discounts. And, you know, it applies to none of those big five retailers or Whole Foods are affected. It only affects the independent retailer community. So in my mind, that's just purely anti-competitive, not just against other retailers, but it's anti-competitive against the organic community.
Yeah, yeah. Who gets the 20% premium that was charged? Does that go to the distributor?
So far, the distributor's happy to take it.
So the farmer doesn't get it.
Oh, absolutely not. Right. The farmer gets the lowest possible price that the federal price supports allow.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're so scaled up and so efficient that they don't care.
And the body that's making this decision, is this a governmental body?
It's a Department of Agriculture, yeah.
So we've got
And so our commissioner has said, not my problem. Attorney General Phil Weiser, who worked with the Obama administration on all the antitrust stuff, says, not my problem. So it's a problem.
Yeah.
Now, let me dig in one more step to your answer, Dave, because were we to try to rebuild appropriately scaled organic dairies anywhere or in the state, but I want to focus on Colorado, we would first need dairy haulers to pick up that milk once it's cooled at the dairy on the farm, right? But if a co-op essentially controlled the milk hauling business and said that, hey, buddy, if you're using your truck to pick up at this small organic dairy, you're going to lose our business. And that's just one short comment over a beer or over a phone call. Do you think that milk hauling company is going to support that organic dairy? You know, this is the kind of thing that causes you to look at a co-op, which protected under the Volstead Act, to collude and set prices among its members. It causes you to question whether or not that co-op is far exceeding its rights under the Volstead Act and directly confronting the Sherman and Clayton antitrust acts. And you'll notice, my last comment, Dave, is every time the big conventional co-ops are sued, they got more money than anybody. They don't care. But the moment that the discovery comes in and they're asked for information about their subsidiary and partner businesses, all of a sudden the settlement check gets cut. And this is what all the old hands in the dairy business are telling me, that it is so dirty, you got to be so careful because there's so much for them to lose.
Yeah. You know, I got to talk with Michael Pollan for the symposium this fall, and we were talking about the Sherman Antitrust Act, and he was very interesting about it. He said, you know, the whole point of the Sherman Antitrust Act to prevent monopoly was not to protect the consumer from high prices. It was to protect democracy from oligarchy, to protect democracy from the concentration of power. And it's really fascinating because we see all these instances now in which there are, in effect, monopolies, and they are being very anti-competitive, but they're producing products that are very inexpensive. So you can't say, oh my God, you're ripping us off by gouging the prices. They're not. They keep the prices very low. They just keep the competition gone.
But let's be clear, a lot of money is being made.
Yes.
And Want to be really careful not to implicate anybody here, but there's a big yogurt company in Colorado. Huge distribution. And I've been told if it gets to the point where we do discovery, see where the interlocking ownership and directorate is between the conventional dairy co-ops and this big yogurt company. Because you depress the prices paid to the farmer, you depress the prices paid to the processor. But all of a sudden the money, and then that milk is sold at a really low cost to a yogurt company, let's say, but you're participating in some other way in those profits. And you gotta dig and dig and dig and dig to find out where that nexus is. Now, Dave, ask me if yogurt is covered by the Colorado Milk Marketing Board.
I don't know. Is yogurt covered by the Colorado Milk Marketing Board?
Magically exempt. No oversight. And no price reporting, and no regulation whatsoever about that about yogurt in Colorado. And these are the things that the old timers are telling me. It's so deep and pernicious. But the key here is, this might be too much for the chat, but I'll make it short. The key is that once a co-op acting under the Volstead exemption exceeds its mandate there, so it's not just benefiting the mutual interests of its members, once it starts double dealing and having outside interests and playing one part of the market off the other, but the benefit does not accrue to the members, it loses its exemption and it's subject to antitrust enforcement. And this is where I'm so disappointed with the attorneys general and some of my legislators who are shrugging this off, because it's clear something is amiss and they're afraid to investigate.
Yeah. We saw that pretty tragic occurrence in the first year of the Obama administration, and the attorney general is going around. This was for poultry, primarily, poultry and pork, I think, and going around to all
of
these.
Cattle, yeah.
And cattle, yeah. Was it cattle too? But they had all these hearings, and people, farmers, fairly heroically came forward and testified against the Tysons of the world and said they own us, and you know we are completely trapped by this system. And then the attorney general just withdrew all interest in the case, and the farmers were left to fend for themselves with these huge employers.
And Colorado's Attorney General Phil Weiser was sitting shoulder to shoulder with Attorney General Holdren, and he didn't want to look at it.
Yeah.
So you asked an innocent little question about why is it so bad and how do we make it better? But we're not going to change that system, but we need to be aware of just how predatory and aggressive conventional dairy co-ops and the vertically integrated retailers are, because we can't dance around innocently like these measures are not going to be pursued against us. So, you know, when we have talked in the Real Organic Project about how we proceed, I've always observed that the Real Organic farms are integrated into a local community economy that recognizes the environmental, social, community, and product quality benefits of a real organic dairy or egg or meat or produce. That's where the conventional co-op and the integrated retailers can't quite operate effectively, although they're giving it a run in Colorado.
Okay, so let's talk about organic. You're on the standards board of the Real Organic Project and have been involved in it from the beginning. And we see a problem in organic, which was intended as the alternative to this system that you've just described. It was intended of, we have a different idea, we can do this ourselves. Amazingly, back around 2000, we got government support, somewhat unwillingly on the part of the USDA, but to set up the National Organic Program. And we're confronting many of the same issues in organic as conventional farmers are facing. Colorado was kind of the birthplace of CAFO Organic with Aurora. Could you talk a little bit about that? Because, of course, most people don't know what Aurora is. Can't talk about that.
Well, I mean, most of their operations are now in Oklahoma and Texas, is my understanding. But they have an operation here in Colorado. And based on my discussions with them, which they don't want me to see it, but you know, Mark Castell and Cornucopia and others have really dug into the details. But what you have is cows that are fed inside or on dry lots, and there's a de minimis amount of pasture available. And so the dairy is running around constantly buying up alfalfa or hay or other fodder to bring in to the cows. But just because they're eating dry matter doesn't mean they're pastured. And they have too many animals on distressed land in the high desert plains environment to claim that those animals could ever be on pasture or pastured every day. At best, they get to wander around some dry dirt. So, you know, if you're the nice young men and women who are promoting Aurora organic dairy, you say that's the best we can do in a high desert environment is give them some dirt to walk on and some baled hay for dry matter, along with as much grain as the organic folks will let us. But ultimately, that doesn't achieve the organic standard. But you can see the dynamic here that they're playing against. Oh, we can't meet the organic standard in this environment, so we are going to water it down so we can claim the seal anyway. That's the nicest way that I can put it. They've moved a lot of that to Texas. You know, land is so much less expensive there than along the Front Range, which is one big metropolis in front of the Rocky Mountains. But the practices are still the same. And that goes for poultry and hogs a lot of times that are really just in CAFOs with some access to land, but they're not pastured. They're not exhibiting natural behaviors. And they tend to be sicker than well-managed animals.
So the founders of Aurora, I believe, were also involved in founding Horizon. Do you know that?
Well, I know the founder of Aurora or one of them. I think I don't know that,
okay.
Dave, but I'll find out for you.
That's okay. I won't have you talk about it then. No, there is a strong connection there. It was kind of fascinating to me.
I do think you're right, just for people who are listening. I do think you're right. I just don't have the details.
Yeah.
And Horizon, you know, it's a borderline product, but it's done well enough that we carry it, and it's very popular.
Yeah.
Because of its price point and the branding.
Yeah. Yeah. So Horizon has been a big topic of conversation in the Northeast, of course, because they very publicly announced that they were dropping all the organic farms that they bought from in Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, and like half the organic farms in New York. And they gave them 1 year, so they still got 8 months to live or whatever. I'm curious, is the organic community in Colorado even talking about that? I've been amazed at how regionally this seems to have hit. Because I don't think it's a regional issue. I think it's a national issue.
It's a good observation. Colorado doesn't have an organic dairy community. The Western organic dairy folks, I forget the name of the organization, they're very much Oregon, Washington, California, primarily because of water issues and grazing issues. There's a lot of land in Colorado that will support one cow per acre with one graze per year. That takes a lot of land, right? But it certainly hasn't gone unnoticed. And the justification that we're hearing is that it's too expensive when we can get cheap organic milk in unlimited quantities elsewhere. I mean, that's just heartbreaking. But the known don't care, right? It's got a new CEO. He's got profit incentives. And the concept of Vermont and community and family dairies and grazing and regeneration and healthy animals and better quality milk and meat, I don't think he'd know what any of those things mean. Sorry. Hate to offend him.
It's, you know, what's happened at Danone is so interesting to me because I don't know if you ever heard Emmanuel Faber speak, but he's a pretty inspiring fellow. And of course, he took Danone North America to become a B Corp.
Right.
That's the biggest B Corp in the world. And I thought, well, you know, maybe they mean it. I don't know. Let's see. Let's see what happens. Let's see whether they invent a different way to do business. And of course, what happened is he got fired. And it appears that the B Corp standards got fired too. It didn't seem like the action of a B Corp what happened.
Right. But don't read too much into the B Corp. People, planet, profit. You know, the requirements to support the planet or people in the B Corp are very incomplete and not what Dave Chapman would think are appropriate.
Okay.
So I think the B Corp reviewed their status and said, well, you're meeting our standard.
Yeah.
But I suggest everyone delve into that planet and people standard and realize that it does not protect Vermont dairy farmers, Vermont land, and Vermont cows. It just doesn't.
Okay. Well, we are facing a situation in our world where we have huge problems. And we have huge climate challenge that we might not survive as a species, where we will see. And I'm curious. I mean, we have a lot of other issues swirling around too. We have an obesity epidemic that is making us sick. The food that we eat is making us sick. And I'm wondering, because what I see is that this does spread like a virus around the planet. And that slowly but surely, fast food does spread and goes to every corner of the world, and people start to look like Americans, you know? And so I'm wondering, how do we change the direction for we, the group of people? I don't mean to be like we're righteous or anything. I just mean we get it, that things are not going well. And how do we change the direction? And if B Corp isn't it, what is it? I mean, do we need to abolish corporations? Do we need to make things hyper-local? Well, I heard a really interesting interview.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the right question. Of course, no one wants to answer it, but I can tell you that everyone listening to this can and should find their local regenerative organic producers and commit to buying from them regularly. That gives them cash flow, it gives them confidence, it gives them the ability to buy equipment and hire people and lease or buy more land. You know, it sounds trite to vote with your fork or to buy local, but if a farmer knows that she has a couple of hundred people that are committed to her success because what she's doing is important to them, that completely changes the equation. Access to credit, access to markets, and access to land, all of those depend on customers being committing to the process. So there is that. What you're describing, though, this global dissemination of destructive agricultural practices, I have a very laborious hobby on LinkedIn and Twitter of going after Syngenta and CropLife in their front groups, which are called Global Farmer Network. And every time they do one of those warm and fuzzy posts about how this morning GMO agriculture is better for the climate, coming out of Cornell Alliance for Science. You know, everyone listening should follow those groups and pound them every time they tell lies. It infuriates them, but more importantly, it prevents one more person from falling for the propaganda. And people are cheering me on, but they're cheering me on privately. And they are sending me private messages saying, love what you do. You're so brave. Aren't you afraid? I'm like, yeah, I'm afraid. Yeah, I'm brave. But what? You're only supposed to do things that are safe, that don't put you in any public jeopardy? If those posts were countered by 10 or 100 Allens every time they go up, the quality of the post is going to change, and eventually they're going to say, I'm giving voice to my opposition, and maybe I better find another way to run my propaganda campaign.
Yeah, that's right. It will take less courage when there's a whole lot more people standing next to you.
Yeah.
Which is where we need to get.
It really does make a difference. I mean, I am changing the quality of those posts, and I'm getting 5 or 6 people to comment and give me a thumbs up when I do it. But make no mistake, it is a burden that I'm carrying. Oh, poor Alan. And I could stop overnight and, you know, go get ice cream instead. But if people are aligned with this and really care about it, those are free things that take a few seconds to do every morning and every night. And for God's sake, get on the bandwagon and push back.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when we started Keep the Soil and Organic, which was the forerunner to the Real Organic Project, it was focused on absolutely on building community and coming together, but the goal of all that was to try and reform the USDA. I mean, we were going to a lot of USDA meetings. That's where I met you. And you stood up at one and spoke, and I said, who the hell is that? Because you spoke really well, Alan. You told the truth. You spoke the truth. And I knew I wanted to get to know you. But at that point, I was focused on, can we get the National Organic Program to protect us, to enforce the rules, you know, to not allow itself to be pulled around like a bull with a ring through its nose. And I think when we started the Real Organic Project, we said, well, we do need to reform government, but that's not going to be our focus. Our focus is going to be on building a movement. And until we do build a movement, I don't think we have a snowball's chance in hell of reforming government. We have to have a lot of people who get it.
I'm not a believer in reforming government, and I that doesn't mean I'm not engaged with it. And I put in my comments yesterday on what I thought about the term cultured meat and cell cultured meat and whatnot. But yeah, government doesn't work. When you look at the Colorado Department of Agriculture, hang on, I got unplugged. When you look at the Colorado Department of Agriculture supporting anti-competitive pricing from its own milk board and throwing its arms up saying, not my problem, and I am old friends with the commissioner and I know Phil Weiser in the AG's office, and I've worked with the Colorado Department of Agriculture for 15 years, hundreds of hours across the table from them working on all sorts of ag issues. Well, it is breathtakingly depressing to say, oh my God, why bother? What's going on here? How can this be so tone deaf and so unresponsive? So that doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying, because if I don't, who knows where it's going to go, right? Fact is, the commissioner, she's the smartest commissioner we've ever had and the most attuned to our natural, organic, regenerative climate issues, but the office is a figurehead office controlled by other forces. So she has no ability to even engage on this issue. So government, yeah, you got to continually push back, but that just gives you the knowledge of who your opposition is. To be honest, it doesn't, it's not a positive solution, but you've got to know what's going on. There's a really uninspiring way to approach it, but I'm sorry.
No, well,
that's the way it is.
That's the hard meal that we are serving. You know, we could have one that sounded a lot better, but it won't taste any better. So where do we go from here? I'm not asking you to describe world peace, you know, in the next 10 years. I'm asking, what step do we take tomorrow? What step, people listening to this, you know, what can they do? What's the most useful thing they can do?
So let me, it's going to sound like a pitch for Natural Grocers, but 99% of your listeners aren't going to know what Natural Grocers is. But we and the general independent natural retail community, the mustard seeds, the mom's markets, the PCCs, the, you know, all of those people, there's about 5,000 of those independents left. We are all about consumer education. We are all about providing science-based, appropriate, understandable, digestible, sometimes short, sometimes long information about these issues. And every time you educate one person and you can get them fired up, give them information that is unassailable so that they are never embarrassed by what they're saying, that is defensible and backed up by facts, they become an advocate. Now, that might be annoying people at Thanksgiving. Okay, that's still a plus. And it might be people who start following different accounts, feeling comfortable and confident and empowered to push back. And it's people who are hearing from that empowered person about what they should be buying and the downsides of organic for Aurora milk and the real downside of, Simple Truth Kroger milk. Like, it's just conventional, man. It's a beautiful label. But that process of education and then each person being an educator, you might go to a party or dinner party like I do and people are like, oh, there he is. Don't ask him anything. But there are people come up and say, I heard you say this. Can I ask you a question? And those are the golden moments, right? That's when you really got to pull back, pause and say, where is this person coming from? What's the entry point? What do I have that will help them, not overwhelm them, but inform them and empower them? And every one of us, again, for free, has that ability. And actually asking people, please learn about this and be an evangelist for regenerative and organic ideals. That's what we need to do. And you get a 500,000 of those people, you get 1 million of those people. Then you have a $1 billion natural grocery chain like Natural Grocers, and you've got PCC and Moms and all these other ones that are just doing gangbuster business. But every one of them publishes science-based information about these issues and pounds their customers about why the price premium is actually the true cost. Not some hoity-toity, affluent, feel-good price for rich people. So thanks for letting me go on that, but that's what I think. It's educating toe-to-toe, belly-to-belly. Understand why this is important, then I'll leave you alone.
Yeah, that's great, Alan. Obviously, the Real Organic Project has come to a similar conclusion. We put a lot of energy into education, and we put a lot of energy into organizing farmers. And of course, organizing farmers is education too, but a lot of the stuff we do, the symposium, the podcast, the weekly letters, is just about helping people to be informed. Because I think if they're informed, we win. It's really simple. If people are informed, right, we win.
They also need to be uninformed or re-educated about the propaganda. Right, that's we call that the campaign of confusion. People hate to be lied to. People hate to be tricked. So there's just gentle conversations about, so you're buying conventional milk. Interesting. And you can't, you know, get on your soapbox like I do. You can't do that, but you have to ask a couple of key questions and let people explore this for themselves. But that synthetic meat thing, that compositive recombinant synthetic protein residue that's being marketed as a meat substitute, boy, you dig into that with people and they're horrified about what it really is. And then they can start taking their own steps about understanding their choices.
Yeah. 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 Campaigns of confusion. It's well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, our time has come to an end. Is there any last thing you'd like to say, Alan?
I'd like to take my hat off to Dave Chapman, Real Organic Project, to Lindley Dixon, and the rest of us or you, because the real answer to what to do next is what you're doing. And I know that when we met, actually, I know this now, when we met, you were just a tomato farmer from what's the town in Vermont? I love the name.
Thetford.
Yeah, Thetford. Yeah. That's all you were. And so many people inspired you to that day. And I'm going to tell you that I think I inspired you too and gave you some confidence that your voice could be even more powerful. And, what Real Organic Project does is extraordinarily important. It's not some sidebar thing trying to get likes and views to generate a little side hustle. This is the real deal. This is the center of the movement. So there's my big pat on the back for you guys.
Thank you, Alan, very much. All right. Well, I've been talking with Alan Lewis. It's a pleasure. And I'm sure I'll see you at a rally or another NOSB meeting one of these days. Thank you, Alan.
Right on. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for listening to the Real Organic Podcast. We hope that you will subscribe, tell your friends, and leave us a rating and review. A video version of this interview can be found at realorganicproject.org/episode68. Please join us next time when our guests are Amy Klippenstein and Paul Osinski of Sidehill Farm, who will share, among other things, what happened when they started using the Real Organic Project label on their yogurt. To support this podcast and our certified farms, become a recurring donor at realorganicproject.org and get the benefits of being a real friend, including our book club, where you can ask our favorite authors your questions. See you next time.